Hello, and welcome to Diabetes Dialogue, Therapeutics, Technology, and Real-World Perspectives. Diabetes Dialogue is a monthly podcast hosted by myself, Diana Isaacs, and Natalie Bellini, providing a regular news roundup of the latest clinically applicable insights across diabetes and metabolic diseases, with a focus on leveraging technology to improve care. Produced by endocrinologynetwork.com, the audio version of Diabetes Dialogue, Therapeutics, Technology, and Real-World Perspectives is available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, with a video version available only on endocrinologynetwork.com.
Welcome to this episode of Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real-World Perspectives. My name is Diana Isaacs, and I am with Natalie Bellini. And we have another action-packed episode today where we want to first do a little wrap-up of the ADCES Technology Conference. I know we had many guests, but we didn't do an official wrap-up to really summarize everything. So we're going to do that today, as well as in the last week, the ADA standards of care were released for 2023. So we'll give some highlights of that. And then also recently in the last couple of weeks, the Dexcom G7 was FDA approved. So let's go ahead and dive right in. Natalie, we were together all weekend at the ADCES Technology Conference, and you did such an excellent job of wrapping up the conference and providing your key takeaways. Do you mind sharing some of those today?
Hi, everyone. So I think the biggest thing about the ADCES meeting in general was that there were people who had experience in technology and those literally who had never used technology consistently, or they knew about it, but they didn't know how to get themselves involved. So the gamut of people who attended was huge. But one of the things I brought to the end discussion is, what is our job? What is our job as a clinician, as a provider, and for those as members of ADCES, for a diabetes care and education specialist? Like, what is our job? And our job is to improve health in those patients wherever they start, to improve their health and protect their organs from the damages of diabetes, and to reduce their disease burden, whether that's on a daily basis or on if at the end of any given period, they say, I'm less burdened by this disease. Isn't that what we're all trying to do in the end? And sometimes I think when we're barraged with all kinds of different messaging and what should I do and how, what is the best thing for our patients in the end, right? So the conference started with basic concept of using a continuous glucose sensor. What does insulin pump therapy look like? What does AID? So every single step of the way was a progression in how to use technology to improve outcomes in patient care. And then we dive deeper into things like reimbursement. How do you get reimbursed for this? How do you pay for it? What happens with that? How do you look at AID and which systems allow for which changes that actually make sense? And then where do we go for support? If I'm a clinician that's struggling, or I'm trying to get something done in my practice, where are there sites and places to go to find support to get answers and not just sit on those questions and hope you find out one day? So there was a great talk on use of diagnostic CGM, right? Clinic-owned professional, it's called CGM, and transitioning patients to personal. Try it and see what happens. And then the reimbursement around that. There was a big discussion on diabetes burnout, right? When is too much? When is it okay to just say to a patient, today, we're not going to look at your data. Today, we're going to sit and be and just make a plan for next time. Today, the only thing that I can tell you is I'm really glad you're here, because you didn't bring anything in. You didn't get your blood work done, but you came. So you came for a reason. And maybe that's just for encouragement. So there was a lot on the distress and the diabetes burden around the use of technology, because sometimes patients are completely overwhelmed, right? So I was impressed. I was at the last meeting and a year ago in 2021, and then here in 2022, and the speakers and the presentations and the programming itself was top notch. I was really, really impressed.
Yeah, thank you. I totally agree. And one of the things that really stood out for me was when Aaron Kowalski did the keynote, the opening, and showed an image of a woman on one of, I guess, the first AID systems, but she was catatonic, laying in a hospital bed. And obviously that is not what we want. We don't need 100% time and range if it means that someone is going to be catatonic. So it is about how can we make it easier for people with diabetes? And we really have to take into account like the toll on mental health, psychosocial care too. We want things to be easier for a person, not harder. I mean, I had someone this week who new diagnosis of type 1 diabetes who tried CGM and really said, like, she goes to me, she goes, do I have to wear this? And I go, no. I was like, this is designed to make your life easier to manage. But if you don't want to wear it now, if you want to do finger sticks, that is totally, like, that is your right. And we will work with you when you decide. If you change your mind later, we'll work with you. But yeah, we want to make life easier, not harder for people.
I think that's a really good example. I mean, that might be the perfect patient to do blinded professional on. Right. So for 2 weeks, every right before you come in, we're going to have you come in and start a blinded professional. You don't need to see the data, but we can look at it together afterwards. Right. And I think that's what we really need to start thinking about is what does the patient want right now? And what can we offer them to get the data that we would love to see as clinicians to help them reduce those fluctuations in glucose and yet respect their own personal, you know, and psychological needs at the same time.
Yeah. So there was a lot. I know you and I also both attended the ICC Framework Thought Leader Summit on the Identify, Configure, Collaborate. And the framework's really designed to help introduce and optimize technologies for people with diabetes. And I think the biggest key takeaway I have is that we need to have an understanding of the landscape, the ecosystem, what technologies are out there so that we can offer it to our patients. And what happens when we don't know that, that's when you run into the danger of, oh, well, we recommend this specific device or this specific thing for everyone because that's all we know, or we're not offering these different options. And really thinking, because there are so many now, there's inhaled insulin, there's wearable insulin devices like patch pumps, there's the smart insulin pumps, there's the smart connected insulin pens. There really are a whole choice, and we need to be aware of that as clinicians, or at least know who to recommend to so people can learn about their different options out there.
Right. As clinicians, we should not. How a patient gets their insulin absorbed into their bloodstream and into the cells that need it should not be about, it shouldn't be about that. It should be what the patient feels most comfortable with at the time. And I think that's right. And we're even looking at that ICC framework. And, you know, in the beginning, we started with ICC, right drug, right, you know, right patient, you know, that. And it's like, is it the right patient? What if I didn't offer something that I should have? Right? How do I know if it's the right tool for the patient? So what we need to do is think about things differently and say, this is all the ways to get insulin in. What kind of perks your interest today? And then set it up that the patient does as well as they can where they are. And the next time they come in, say, hey, this is new, or let's revisit all of these again. And let's think about how is it going? You thought it would be easier. Was it? Is it? Tell me about what you need next. And I think that's a big part of it. Is reframing what we think versus what they think. You know, the patient is living their own life and we don't get to see so much of it that we don't know what will be easier for them or how their brain would think that would be easy or not. I think that the Aaron Kowalski talk, he said, I'm using AID right now and inhaled insulin on top of it. And that was a really good, okay, stop in your tracks. So how often are you really using inhaled? Is it only to treat highs? Are we not thinking about that for other patients? So it was a great, I'm looking forward to next year already.
Awesome. Yeah. There were so many really good takeaways from the conference, and yeah, it'll be, stay tuned. Hopefully even more people will attend last year. Oh, one other thing I want to mention too, is just the chance to wear different devices. So as part of the planning committee, that was something, you know, we heard from people. They really wanted the chance to get their hands on different things. And so we had Dexcom, Abbott, and Ascensia all offered the opportunity to be able to kind of wear the different devices. I guess with Ascensia, I mean, that's the implantable ever since. So they didn't act, it wasn't actually inserted, but at least they got the chance to see what the transmitter was like and put that on their arm and everything. So heard great things about people that got the chance to do that. So,
and I think that that makes just it much more realistic for a person to say, I put one on, it didn't hurt, it did this, I felt this, I was nervous too. You know, those kinds of discussions with patients bring down that level of tension when you're in the office, when you can, you know, when you can talk like that.
And so I know I love the chance to be able to wear things because that's how I learn best. I always say if there's a way to mess something up, I will do it. I had to practice inserting like the pump infusion sets so many times because every way you could mess it up, I would mess it up. But that was really good learning for me. And now when I'm training patients, I know all the things where they might run into trouble. And so I think I'm a better diabetes care and education specialist because of it. So I'm glad we could offer that opportunity for people. So I'd like to switch gears, if it's okay with you, and talk about the American Diabetes Association standards of care. I've had the great privilege of serving on the professional practice committee over the last 3 years, and that's the committee that updates these standards. So I do just want to let our listeners know kind of the process that goes into this. We do have a very interdisciplinary committee that meets throughout the year to really evaluate the new literature that is out there, as well as feedback. People can actually comment on the standards of care and turn in, and we do. We review all of that stuff. And we actually come up into different subgroups for each section. There's 17 sections total. And we update them, and then we meet as a big committee to talk about all of the updated recommendations. So this year, there's a bunch of, I think, exciting things. And before I just go on and on and on and talk about all those things, Natalie, I'm just going to ask you anything that, I don't know if you got a chance to read the whole thing so far, but anything that you noticed that you were excited about being updated?
I think one of the biggest things is bringing the standard of care, some of the standards to other groups, right? To match other groups. So like blood pressure. The blood pressure guidelines are 130 over 80 now, which matches other groups like the American Heart Association. The LDL goal of less than 70 if you have diabetes at all, and then less than 55 if you have a cardiovascular, you've already had an event. So that has been the standard for other groups. And the ADA had, their numbers didn't match. And one of the things you and I had talked about is that, you know, if you are a clinician, you know, and you go to this group for this answer and this group for this answer and this group, and they all have different answers, it gets very confusing, right? Especially people who are new to practice. And I think having everyone on the same playing field, no matter where you are, that means if the patient's blood pressure is elevated, we're going to treat it wherever you are, whether that is in endocrinology or primary care. If your LDL, we need to raise your statin. We need to. So those things are exciting to me because I think we're going to deliver better care as a group. So, and then the other biggest one is, excuse me, the cardiovascular risk reduction goals. We know as clinicians who treat diabetes as a profession that patients have a higher risk of cardiovascular and renal events. And now it has been called out and said, there are drugs out there to really protect your heart and your kidneys and your cardiovascular system. And we need to be using them early on and aggressively for patients at the highest risk.
So those are great points. I especially am really glad that the blood pressure and LDL goals align with other organizations. I think there's been a lot of controversy over blood pressure because the different trials have shown different outcomes. And then the SPRINT trial, which really supported the less than 130 over 80, that excluded people with diabetes. So, I mean, there was definitely rationale for the different
Yes.
goals, but I think now being in alignment will really help, and also to help overcome therapeutic inertia. Because when that goal is 140 over 90, inevitably people are like 142 over 92, and you're like, well, they're close enough. So I'm glad now it's just simplified, that 130 over 80. And then also we have so many new cholesterol agents now that I think it we can definitely now more easily help people to get those lower LDL goals of 70 and 55 when indicated, when we need to add to maximum statins, maximum dose statins. So, yeah, I'm glad to see things really move forward in that direction. Also, like overall in the standards, hopefully people notice there's more of a person-centered focus, trying to use person with diabetes over patient in many indications, not all the time, but in many times. Also, I don't know if everyone noticed this or anyone noticed this, but the standards of care used to be called the standards of medical care, and now it's standards of care. The word medical was removed. And a big proponent of that was Jane Seeley. So thank you, Jane, for that. But just trying to be more inclusive. It's not just medical care, right? It's all kind of addressing all forms of diabetes care, especially psychosocial care, which was also very much added to this year in the standards. I
And
also
then also the weight loss, right? That let's try to get, the goal is 15% weight loss, but we never had an ability. We did. Some patients could do it just by saying, go join one of these assisted, maybe an app, maybe go to a weekly meeting, go work with a dietitian, join the Y. But there was never really any way that we could do, we could actually follow through. And we, some people did it and some people didn't. Now there are medications that go with that. And I'm a big proponent in no matter what you give a patient, if behavioral and diet recommendations aren't done at the same time, we just get less outcome. But there are now medications that we can use. Some of the same ones that protect the heart and the kidneys also help with weight reduction, and we're seeing a huge improvement in weight reduction and also a focus on that through these new guidelines.
that's a great point. Yeah. So it's like in the past, it was more like 5 to 7% weight
Right.
loss. And that's still great. But yeah, if we can achieve even more, such as 15% or greater, that is likely to have even more positive outcomes. So yeah, that was added to Section 5 and Section 8, the lifestyle, behavioral, and then also the obesity section. Another change also that happened is just regarding the vaccines, which we're not going to go into all of that, but just know that there's more pneumococcal vaccine choices now. There's the PCV15 and the PCV20. So it's a little nuanced in terms of which one you got first. Did you get the PCV23 or the 13? But that's been added now, as well as more guidance on COVID vaccination as well. And then in terms of technology, so there actually weren't a ton of changes in the technology section, but one really notable one I want to highlight is the recommendation about use of CGM in people with type 2 diabetes on basal insulin only and other non-insulin agents. So in the past, it said CGM can be used in this population. And now it says that a real-time CGM or intermittently scanned CGM should be offered for diabetes management in those on basal insulin. So that was a much stronger recommendation this year, really based on all the work done with like the mobile study and the mobile follow-up study supporting the use in this population.
And hopefully we're going to get Medicare to make the decision in the near future that they'll actually cover CGM for type 2, right? On pa right now, patients need to be on mealtime insulin at least 2 injections a day in order to get coverage for most Medicare, for Medicare itself, but also the supplemental side of Medicare plans. And the ultimate goal is that those patients, any patient taking a drug that can make their blood sugars low, sh should have access to a CGM. It's very difficult when a patient says to me, "I take basal insulin only, and by the way, I cannot go for a walk without getting low." And it's like, "Well, I need your heart to be healthy, and I need you to do this. So how do I balance the two?" With a CGM, it could say to you, "You're 90 and you're dropping," or "you're whatever," and warn the patient so they can bring something with them and feel more confident in doing it. Because I think a lot of patients just choose not to, which is not the answer. So, lots and lots of people who take only basal or use a sulfonylurea, an oral agent that can cause hypoglycemia, those patients need to have access to this.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I had a patient last week that had a severe hypoglycemia and had a motor vehicle accident because of it. Now, interestingly, this person was on CGM, however, was on an older system that did not have alerts. And so I saw the person had CGM and I was like, well, didn't your CGM alert you? And the person said, well, no, I don't think my system alerts me. And sure enough, I figured out it was an older system. So speaking of that, I mean, there have just been so much happening in the CGM space in terms of new devices, it just keeps getting better and better. And so, of course, earlier this year, the Libre 3 got approved. That was really exciting. That's in people's hands now. But very recently, the Dexcom G7 got FDA approval. And so that is expected to be launching in early 2023. Natalie, any highlights you want to share about this new system?
Absolutely. Where do we start, right? So Dexcom, I think, really went back to what do patients say now with the G6, right? What do they say? What are their biggest challenges? And I use a lot of CGM in my practice. Almost every patient I see is on some sort of CGM, even if it's just diagnostic a couple of times, 3, 4 times a year, right? They've removed the transmitter. It's gone, right? So it is a completely disposable, it's 10 days, completely disposable system. The warm-up time has been reduced from 2 hours to 30 minutes. So patients are without their data for 30 minutes when they're doing warm-up. And there's what we're calling a soft warm-up, which means you can put a new sensor in, leave the old one on, and then start the new one, and you'll never miss any data. That's a big deal, especially for patients with hypoglycemic unawareness, especially for someone on an AID that trusts that system and to protect them from hypoglycemia. I'm impressed with their new, I'm impressed.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's really exciting. It's going to be more as people kind of think about the Libre, how the whole thing is all disposable and everything, and it's smaller. It's going to be like that. And while with the current G6 system, it's not that it's so hard to, attach the transmitter and have the different transmitter code. This just takes away one thing that
Right.
will make it even easier to be able to use it. Another amazing thing. So in the past, CGM has had a contraindication in pregnancy, and that's been removed. And so this really opens up the door for being able to use the G7 in gestational diabetes, as well as people that have pre-existing diabetes in pregnancy. That's a population I work a lot with. So I'm really excited about it just being more widely accessible to everyone. I think people do have a lot of questions about the connectivity with automated insulin delivery with insulin pumps, connected pens, and everything. And what we know so far is that it's expected pretty much immediately to have, like, in terms of the ability to share, for example, with like connected pens and other mobile apps, that will be available. The actual connectivity, for example, with Omnipod 5 or Tandem Control IQ, that will just be dependent on how quickly those systems can integrate. My understanding is they're working like they're trying to get it so that can happen really,
Right.
really quickly. Because, of course, people using those systems will want to wait until it's compatible. Otherwise, they could get the G7, but they're not, it's not going to automate insulin delivery. I think it's so cool, this warm-up thing. Now, the fact, like you said, 30 minutes, and the fact that you can start a new one while the other sensor is still working. So that means people in closed loop will have, like, there will be no interference. There will no longer be that 2 hours where you're have to defer back to your manual settings or the limited mode. That will be no more, which I think is pretty awesome.
I think it's amazing. And I also think that it's going to take a software upgrade, right? So whether you're on an Omnipod 5 or a Tandem insulin pump, because the warm-up time is hard set into those pumps, into that software, it's going to be that they're going to need to, for Tandem, you plug in and upload. For Omnipod 5, they'll download you, right? And so from their cloud, so there's a couple of steps, and this is what happens every time there's an upgrade, right? So it's going to be available. And by the way, we haven't even talked about the reader, and that they've
Yeah.
redone the reader and they've redone the app. And like we're only touching the tip of the iceberg with the things that Dexcom has addressed and improved for patient use, right? This is a patient use. We use it as clinicians to get easier for the patient. And we just talked about reducing burden, right? But anyway, so it's going to need to be an upgrade, a software upgrade for those pumps. And the beautiful thing is both of those products can do an upgrade without you having to send it in and get it done. But you got to remember that this is going to take a little bit of time. So I think it will happen pretty quickly. I think both companies want this for their patients. Don't get me wrong. And they're already working on it, even if it's not available yet, because now it's FDA approved. So hopefully it will be sooner than later, but we don't want to tell you it's going to be April 1st because you're going to all call us and say, why isn't it here yet? Or July 1st, right? And that's the same thing I've said to patients. You got to be patient as they're doing it as quickly as they can. They know people are going to want to convert.
Definitely. And you made a good point. Yeah. About the new receiver, the fact that it's supposed to, it's just better visually,
yep,
colors, and it integrates the Clarity data in with it. So that's nice, because there's always some people that prefer to use a receiver over their smartphone,
yep,
or want the option to use both. So that's an option. And I think it'll be nice that we will be able to see some of that data directly in that G6 app or on that receiver, even if we don't have the full Clarity that we're logging into. So that's a great update too. I also just wanted to share, we know that Libre 3 has submitted to the FDA that they've tried to overcome the vitamin C drug interaction. So for those that don't know, the vitamin C drug interaction, because of it, there's a warning that the system should not be combined with automated insulin delivery systems, even though it has an iCGM status that it's accurate enough to be integrated. So that's exciting, because it has been submitted to the FDA, which paves the way for then future integration of Libre 3 with these pumps. And we know outside of the US, Libre 3 is already starting to be integrated with other insulin pumps. So this goes back to the ADCS tech conference, because Gary Shiner, he gave a great talk about insulin pumps. And the fact that people really, where we're heading is people can choose their pump, their CGM, their algorithm that they're using. People will really be empowered and have all the different choices. So that's just so great to see.
Yeah, I agree. I think that I would love in the future, if we could have a Natalie and Diana crystal ball, it would be someone would choose a Dexcom with a Tandem, a Libre 3 with a Tandem, whatever with this, with that. And all the companies have made public statements saying we want to do this, right? And so as technology is just, I mean, it's like, get on the train, here it goes, right? As fast as we can be, we want this for our patients too, right? And that, as a clinician, I think we need to remember that we need to stay on top of all of this technology and know what it does and how it works, so that when there is an opportunity to help a patient make a decision, that we can say, well, it doesn't really work that way. Let me explain it so that you can see this or that. And again, just to reduce the burden and improve our patient outcomes.
For sure. And I'm going to take this like full circle, because like speaking of all this AID and the CGM, that was another update too with the standards of care in the older adult section, really expanding the use that we should be offering technology to older adults as well. There's a lot of benefits in that population too. And so especially people with type 1 diabetes, we should be offering AID systems and the use of CGM, again, reinforcing those on basal insulin should be offered CGM. So, and as long as we're back talking about ADA standards of care, see how I did that? I segued. I wanted to mention one other thing that I was really excited to see this year. So for a long time, there's been this recommendation about, well, if someone's on metformin, you should periodically monitor vitamin B12 levels. And I think like in practice, we're like, well, what does that mean? Like, what does periodic mean? Is that like once a year? Is that like every
right.
other year? Like, what does that mean? Right. So now there's more guidance, actually, that it says after 4 years of use, that's when evidence shows that vitamin B12 levels could start to go down with chronic metformin use. So that would be the time to really start to monitor. And after that point, consider annually monitoring the B12 level. So I feel like that's a practical piece that hopefully will really help people in practice, I'm hoping.
Again, I think the same thing. When it says periodic, I think we all think someone else is doing it, even if you're the
That's
prescriber,
true.
Right? So I think that, again, if there is if there is absolute guidance that says do this, right, we can build those also into the EHR, right? So that the EHR can say this patient, it has been, you know, is 68 years old and needs a B12. Do you want the B12 to go with it? Do you want the, you know, because I think we're all probably guilty of not doing it enough. Or those people that do it every 3 to 4 months, the whole time their patient is on metformin, which is also overkill, right? So we're trying to reduce the cost of healthcare, and guidance like this tells me what to do and what not to do. So I think that's going to be a big help in overall.
Yeah. So we're not possibly going to be able to get through all the standards of care, but I think we've got some exciting guests and things in the future that people will be able to learn from. So this will definitely not be it. One last thing I do want to mention, since I was very much involved with Section 5, the facilitating behavior, positive health behaviors. The title actually changed this year as well to be more positive. But there's new information about screening for food insecurity, which is a big deal, because if someone has food insecurity, then everything else kind of, I don't know, kind of falls by the wayside. Like, you could have the best medication regimen in the world, but like, they can't even afford food. They don't have access to food. So addressing that is definitely becomes the primary concern. But also, we know like intermittent fasting and time restricted eating have gained in popularity over the years. And so that there's not a ton of evidence on it, honestly, but that is now addressed. And the evidence we do have is included as one of the many options for people. And I think it really comes down to individualizing. People always ask me, like, how should I eat? What's the diabetes meal plan? And there isn't one, because there's a lot of different ways that can work for people. And so it is mentioned now in the standards.
And I think we need to, when we think about a diabetes meal plan, you know, it needs to be culturally relevant, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't want to take away all of someone's foods because they're not something I would eat if I had diabetes, right? Or you would eat if you had diabetes. So, you know, we need to make sure that we are addressing that. And that's why we have the diabetes care and education specialists. I have a couple that I refer to consistently, and they're very good about saying to patients, what do you want? How do we incorporate that in so that you don't, you know, I don't want patients to feel like they don't have an ability to pick and choose, right? But if a patient has no access to food and I put a CGM on them and they've got this great diabetes day, and it's because they fasted because they had no choice, boy, have I done them wrong. Look at this great day. Oh, wait, I didn't eat because I didn't have anything until the, you know, the soup kitchen opened at 5 p.m. You know, that's what a poor interaction, right? So we need to make sure patients have access to food and access to the support to get it if they don't, right? So screening for that, this has never been brought up in, you know, as a major point in care. This is a big deal. I'm really impressed with the work that went into the standards of care this year. I really am, because it looks at the whole patient. It looks at the patient as a person that is in society. And as we said at the ADCES tech meeting, these are people and they have stuff. They have mortgages and food insecurities and their roof leaks and it's about to be zero here this weekend and this goes on and their pipes freeze. And we have to make sure that they have the framework to deal with their diabetes before we start throwing things at them that would help them do something that they're not really ready for. So impressive. Gosh. Yeah.
I so agree. I think that is such a fantastic note to end on. So thank you everyone for listening. And that concludes this episode of Diabetes Dialogue. Stay tuned for next time, where we will expand even more on standards of care and other interesting things.